Welcome to the Fantasy NASCAR podcast brought to you by RaceForThePrize.com. We've got salaries for Kansas. Let's review the salaries, try to find some value picks that are going to help us this weekend. Also, maybe find some point per dollar plays at the top. Look at some of the numbers that we're trying to hit. How do we get into the top 10? How many points do we need to get from our value drivers? We'll touch all of those bases. Taking a little different approach this week, hyper-focused on Dover and Texas, agree or disagree. You want to throw Las Vegas into your process, that's fine. You can throw any data point in if you go to RaceForThePrize.com. Subscribe to the sheets, $30 for May. Get all the sheets for this wonderful month of racing. You just Venmo, PayPal, or Cash App some money over to me. I'll share the sheets with you. And you can decide what you want to do. Now, this very sheet I'm making free. There's a PDF of it. Available at RaceForThePrize.com. If you want to get your hands on it, go ahead and jump on over there. Again, I'm hoping for hyper-focused on Dover and Texas, and I know they're not the best indicators for Kansas. Las Vegas is more comparable, but Las Vegas was quite some time ago. We've seen teams go up and down since then. And what I'm really looking for is, did you have speed at Dover? Did you have speed at Texas? Is that going to help you lead laps at Kansas? Is that going to help you stay on the lead lap or have a chance to be a surprise value pick? Now, we're doing things differently with this sheet. Overall, what this sheet does, the purpose is to see, did you have speed in these specific races? If we look at average running position for a regular statistic from NASCAR, imagine a driver wrecks halfway through the race. So for half of the race, they're scored in last place, and then their average is really bad. But what if they had a bit of speed before that? So what I've done is calculated here in column E and F. Before they had an issue, or if they didn't have an issue, we're simply calculating the laps that they were running. So if a guy didn't have an issue, no big deal. Their average here will be very similar to their average that NASCAR has. If a driver wrecked halfway through, then we may be able to see that this driver actually had speed at Texas or Dover before the event happened. And most of the general public is going to see a really bad number and believe that this car struggled more than possibly that it did. Now, there's another thing we have to also be aware of is if a driver has an issue, but then goes back out and slugs around for quite a while, and their average running position is still going to be pretty bad. Like, for example, Brad Keselowski spins, but then runs a bunch of laps in the back, so we're not going to get some sneaky stat from him because he did end up running a bunch of laps. But he did have a wreck on lap 224 at Dover. So knowing that and knowing this, the car is probably a little bit better than what we're going to see from his average running position and even my modified average running position. Just little details that may be able to give you a little bit of an edge over other people. I mean, if you look at the box score from Dover, Keselowski looks pretty bad. So the general idea is that most people will not want to roster him. But when we add in the context of he wrecked on lap 224, went back out, finished the race for the most part, but logged worthless laps. Those worthless laps translate into an ugly box score. That's what we're looking for. Same thing with Todd Gilliland. Wrecks on lap 39. He goes out and runs in last place for 350 laps. So on the box score, he is going to look bad, but the box score in no way reflects the speed that he has. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to separate from the other statistics that other people are looking at. So again, columns E and F are looking at, well, when were they actually running? Before an event, before an issue. Now, it doesn't always apply because if they went back out there, it's going to log those laps as well. Over here, we average the two of Dover and Texas, and then we rank it. We look at the modified average laps over the two races, and then who was the best in terms of that. So, for example, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., who finished 35th at Dover and 23rd at Texas. But if we look at his laps when he was running before issues, 11th and 19th for an average of 15th, 13th best driver. That's the kind of thing we're trying to look for is, public's going to be looking at these numbers. Or maybe even their driver ratings. 15th at Dover driver rating, though. 21st. But we have been marked a little bit better. This car has some speed, but that speed is not really translating onto the box score. Imagine that. It's Ricky Stenhouse Jr. So Our columns here are, these are the modified average laps, mainly average laps before an issue. Over here is a ranking of those average laps. So Stenhouse was in an average position of 11th before he wrecked at Dover. That was the 10th best average on the day. At Texas, his average running position of his actual laps was 19th. That was the 23rd best on the day. Over here, we have their driver rating rank. So we take their driver rating from the race as provided by NASCAR, and we take it out of the 0 to 150 scale and just say from top to bottom, all right, who is the highest rated driver based on their formula? Who was the worst? Stenhouse was the 15th best car that day, according to driver rating. Austin Dillon was the 31st. Over here, we just have their actual finishes. So Stenhouse, top 15 speed, but due to the wreck, 35th on the scoreboard in the end. Last columns. I've got an early week projection based on a bunch of different things, and they are very conservative right now. Again, we don't have starting position. We haven't seen practice yet. This is just a general idea. I like to do it going into every week, seeing like, all right, this is where I feel like this guy fits in from a conservative, really less aggressive approach. Around 19th place, maybe that's more aggressive than you are. Maybe you're more bullish on him, but I don't think it's extreme based on some of the data that I've seen. Most of the data that I've seen say, hey, Stenhouse, 19th place driver. That translates into 24 fantasy points. That's 19 points below the cut line for a top 10. You see, at 43 at the top, typically 43 fantasy points gets you into the top 10 at Kansas. So if on a conservative day, we don't have any place differential right now factored in, we don't have any fast laps, although I don't expect him really to get any. But if he finishes where he should and doesn't get any place differential, that's 24 fantasy points. That's pretty far from that 43 cut line. But he is a value driver, and the value drivers don't necessarily need to get into the top 10. The value drivers probably need to go more towards this number of 35. That would be our target. And he's a little bit closer, obviously, to that. 11 down. Now, this column is where I say, all right, let's give him a boost because of the nature of Kansas racing and the nature of NASCAR in general. All in all, Stenhouse probably around 19th in speed. We put in some attrition of mechanical failures, pit road issues that happened to multiple cars. And as you can see over here, you look at Dover, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 cars that wreck out. Gilliland wrecked. Kozlowski's involved in a wreck. Kaz is just slow. That's not really going to be an attrition boost. Jimmy Johnson was just slow. That's not really going to be an attrition boost, but they did finish 5 and 6 laps down. Ryan Preece had a mechanical issue. So just based on attrition alone, drivers can gain spots. And then based on the nature of the racing with the restarts and the ability to make some big gains at Kansas, what we're going to do is give them a boost of 10. You can also approach it from the idea that, well, they'll probably get some place differential, whatever you want to do. Let's just boost it up, be a little bit of aggressive. So we'll give him an extra 10 points. And so for Stenhouse, you give him 34. And then, hey, there he is, 34. Now he's 9 points below the top 10. But as a value driver or a Le Mans class, which probably more is the Lemons class, as we'll refer to it, the LM class. You know, in the truck series, we probably should start calling it the Lemons class in the truck series too, instead of the backpack. But you have the top tier in truck series, and you have the backpack battles. Kind of have a top tier, a mid-pack, and a backpack in the Xfinity series, maybe 3 tiers in the Xfinity series. Cup series, we've got the top tier, top 20-ish. And then you've got your backpack, or as we'll refer to it as the LM class, the Le Mans class, the Lemons class. And among the Lemons class, he's looking like one of the better value plays at 5.2x. Doesn't really stand out, but it's early. These numbers could get larger based on place differential. He's not far off from that 35 number that gets us maybe a top 15 DFS score, gives us some savings, and allows us to build a winning lineup. Let's look through. Now, A lot of data to go through here. I do want to focus mainly on these drivers. So I've explained all of this. Again, you can get this sheet at racewiththeprize.com for free. I'm always trying to mess around with the data. You know me. I want to help you out as best as possible, save you time, make it easy and comfortable for you so you can have fun. And hopefully you'll join with us and keep this baby going. We'll start at the bottom and work up in our lemons class. So I'm marking the lemons class basically down from Michael McDowell down. You can decide that, well, this guy's not really in that class, whatever. Here it is. Krauss definitely in the class. Did some extra Krauss research wondering, why does this guy still stick around? Well, apparently, his dad has connections with Paul Menard and the Menard family over the years, and that's helped him have connections in racing, and he is currently a sim driver for Kolleg and I believe another team. So through those connections and the work he puts in, occasionally he gets a ride. By no means like a Silver Spoon kid, but definitely fortunate to be connected to the people that are the Menards. All right, so Krauss, not really that interested, but it is a colored car. He's not completely off the board. And AJ Allmendinger was pretty good at Dover last week. They had a good car for AJ. Daniel Hemric, although he finished much better than where he should have and got very, very lucky by running long, he had a car that was able to put him in that position to run long. So Krauss will be driving a halfway decent car more than likely. And for that reason, I wouldn't completely eliminate him from the pool. Also, given that he, more so than other drivers, will be starting further towards the back. Haley, same situation, but as you can see, he's not highlighted. The highlighted drivers are the guys that I think really can get there. We look at his laps at Dover when he's on track, 29th, 26th. That's really pushing it. Sounds like he's going to lose laps. What I really want is a driver who can take advantage of the restarts, get that boost at the end, get a place differential, finish much better than where they run. I don't know if Haley can be that steal late in the race based on his laps. If he is running around 29th, 26th, and that's what all the indicators say. Now, he did get boosted Dover in Texas, but again, Texas was wild. I don't think Kansas is going to be that wild. And with Dover, there was tons of attrition. And, you know, given credit, he did get into a solid finish of 23rd, but there wasn't much speed there. Again, you can't completely eliminate him because he is getting it done, but I'm not that excited. Again, 5,100, though, Haley always seems like that guy that I say, I'm not playing. And then when it comes time to build, we end up building. And if we look right now with the conservative projection, I mean, this might be actually aggressive, 27th. That's 25 fantasy points. That's pretty short of that 35 that we need. And I think even getting to 27 is pretty tough for him to get there. We need a lot of attrition. We need a lot of wrecks. The guy that's jumping off the board, and seems to jump off the board every single week, it's not really much of a surprise, is Todd Gilliland. And I know I tend to be a Gilly homer. And the Gilly play didn't work last week, but that was because he spun out. But regardless of that, when we look at speed that he has exhibited at Texas when he was running laps, as 19th. Obviously, the Dover laps are going to look terrible because his wreck was early in the race and he went back out there and logged laps way in the back. So he is a 34 on the board. But overall, throughout the season, he has been a 22nd rated driver. And so I have no problem projecting him to finish 22nd. That gives him 20 points. Not going to hit 43. But at 5,200, we're not trying to get a top 10. You give him a boost of attrition, maybe has a good restart at the end, 30 fantasy points. Again, that's not the 35 that we would like. It's close, but it is showing as one of the better point per dollar plays at 5.8. He simply has more speed than Haley, Krauss, Herbst, and Burton. Herbst is going to be in a Rick Ware car. The Casgrala typically runs. I don't think you can get too excited about that. I mean, it's you're getting the straight punt car, but it's not even the straight punt price. Maybe Herbst gets a little bit more out of it. I don't think so. Usually we can completely cross off Harrison Burton, but I will want to point a little bit here too. All right, he is getting close to being able to hang on to that lead lap and to be able to dice it up with all the different restarts. Texas, 25th in terms of actual laps run, but doesn't get the finish. Surprise, it's Harrison Burton. Dover, he did at least run inside the top 30 for most of the race and gets a little bit of a boost at the end. But I think there's just better plays, and we have seen enough out of Harrison Burton in this car to say that, all right, when it comes down to the end of this race and the drivers in the Lemons class are battling, what makes us think? I mean, that's one of the ways to approach this. Obviously, place differential is going to be a deciding factor, but what we're really doing when we look at these value picks, one or two is going to decide your winning lineup. The value pick doesn't have to outperform the top-tier drivers. It's just who is the best driver among the value picks, but also who scores the most fantasy points among the value picks. So imagine a secondary race or the Lemons class race taking place. You know, you've got Larson and Truex and those guys doing their thing. And then behind that, you're going to have to look at some of the guys in the back. And when we look at the guy, my recording has paused for a second. Hold on. I am recording on a secondary machine over a hotspot because of technical difficulties. Hopefully this thing is working out today. Again, what I was saying is you've got the main race going on, and then you've got another class competing. And there are really two kind of things that we need to look at is one, who's going to win that class, the Lemons class, the LM class, because they're going to score more finishing points. But also we have to keep in mind that we may not necessarily need the best of the Lemons class. We also need the Lemon that scores the most fantasy points. So you could argue that, oh, Coilajoy is going to finish the best in this class. But if Coilajoy starts 25th and can't get any place differential, whereas you have maybe it's Daniel Hemric starting 32nd and finishes third in the class, but is scoring more fantasy points, is a better point per dollar play, then that's who we want to target. So we're not simply just seeing who's going to be the best in the class of Lemons. We want the best in the class of Lemons, but we also have to keep in mind and be cognizant of, can they actually score some fantasy points that are going to matter? Now, right now, we're just looking at who we really think is going to finish towards the top. And if we just approach it from this class, who can maximize finishing position, Kraus is not that guy. Could he be a place differential guy that dices it up? Maybe, but I think it's a stretch. And for $100 more, you probably get a little bit more speed and talent from Haley. But again, when we look at the Lemons class and we try to decide who's going to finish higher, it's probably not going to be Haley either. Now, Gillen, I would argue, has enough speed that he could be one of the top two. But if he does not have access to place differential points, meaning that he mainly starts where he should finish, which my projection of 22, then you might want to downgrade him a little bit. But I could argue that there are a few of these drivers in the Lemon class who are going to hang on the lead lap and really could benefit from some restarts at the end and can break out of the Lemons class, score some finishing position points that are competitive with the main class. Herbst does not seem to be the guy that's going to be the top of the Lemons. Burton does not seem to be the guy that's going to be the top of the Lemons. That being said, I did want to discuss the speeds aren't completely ugly for Burton. And if he does provide some place differential, maybe a halfway finish amongst the Lemons could work out at this price. Daniel Hemric, we look at his data. Overall, in these last two races, 23rd. Pretty good. Obviously, he can't compete with the top tier, but he does illustrate that sometimes the Lemons can break through if certain things work. He ran long at Dover, caught the caution, got into the clean air, and just held his position. Has that big day. And we're likely going to see one of these guys pull that off. But again, if they do pull that off, it's not going to be a guy that runs, I wouldn't suspect, a guy that's running in 28th to 25th all day. It's a guy that's close to the top 20 who can work the magic. That's why I like Gillen. He's generally had the speed that puts him in that spot where he can break through and get that finish if the sun shines upon him. Shined upon Hemric last week. Hemric should be at the top of the class based on the last two races. The season has been a struggle. But again, I'm more hyper-focused on what are you doing now? Is your team starting to find some speed? Kolig looks like it has found some speed over the last 2 weeks. And I think Hemric is a guy that we could consider being right there battling with the Lemons. This darker shade of yellowish orange are some of the fringe Lemons that I can't completely write off, but are not really the guys I think are going to be battling for the highest spot. Zane Smith had a lot of speed at Texas. He did not have a lot of speed at Dover. And if we look, as far as I can tell, there weren't any issues with Zane Smith in this race. He didn't wreck or spin. He just didn't have any speed. And worse than that, his average lap was 31. And we've got drivers that didn't even finish the race that should have inflated the stats a little bit through attrition. Now, ultimately, he gets a 24th, 26th place finish because we have so many other drivers that didn't have any issues. So give him some credit because he got through the race, but the speed's not there. So if the question simply is just on the surface, will he be at the top of the C class? No. Now, can he benefit from attrition starting in the back? Absolutely. And so he can get a little bit more place differential maybe than a LaJoie can or a Stenhouse can or a Gillen can. So he is going to be in play because he could finish halfway through the C class. He did have a really good car at Texas. And he did have a really good car in that Texas practice. He could finish above Burton, Herbst, Haley, and Kraus. That's not an exaggeration. He could get halfway through that C class. And he could also benefit from cars wrecking out. And so he is a possible play. But getting to the top of the C class, or the Lemon class, and then benefiting at the end doesn't seem as likely as it is for a Gillen, a Hemric, or a LaJoie. LaJoie, the numbers are pretty consistent. His lap's 22 at Dover. His lap's 22 at Texas. His actual rating at Texas was 29. Now, one of the reasons I would argue that he looks poor in terms of driver rating is because there were times in this race where he was just kind of slugging around in the back, not really recording really fast times because there was no point in it. And so it actually makes his driver rating look bad, whereas the car spent most of his time in 22nd place and was close to a top 20 car. But based on, hey, I'm in 31st, I don't really have to record the fastest lap times, he shows up as a 29 at Texas. But overall, I would say this is a close to a top 20 car, putting him at the top of the C class at $5,700. That works. You give him a projection of 21 fantasy points. Obviously, that's 22 below the cut. Boosting by 10, he's almost there towards that 43, but 31 is not far off from 35. You bake in some place differential. He is one of the drivers that could get a benefit from the end at Kansas. He's there. Austin Hill. So another reason why we do this, look at their actual laps, because Austin Hill had, as you can see in the bottom right of your screen, a steering issue at Texas. And so for 200 laps, at least, almost, he's going to be scored dead last. And so, oh, look at this guy. He finished 38th. His driver rating was 35th. Oh, no, he's just not good. Well, if we actually look at his specific laps, okay, well, before he had an issue, what did this car look like? Well, the average lap was 19th. That ranks out on the day as the 24th best driver. So that puts him right here with LaJoie. Now, again, it's a small sample. We're only looking at 98 laps, but it is an RCR car, and it gives us a little bit more of a read. If most people are going to be looking at maybe the driver rating, finish, average running position, and all those numbers are going to be ugly for Austin Hill because of his steering issue. But if we look at his specific lap-by-lap data, which you can get at racefortheprize.com, you'll see that this car probably has top 20 speed. And if he finishes around 23rd, which is probably a really conservative projection, 19 points, not going to get you there. You give him a boost. The 29 fantasy points. Again, that's not top 10, but you're getting close to that 35 mark. And is he a guy that could win this class? Yes. And being in that position then, could he take advantage of a late race restart? Yes. So he's another one of our yellow drivers that we like. Corey Heim, there's a couple of ways to analyze his Dover race. He probably should have finished 21st, but he pit right before the caution. And so among the Lemons class, that put him behind the eight ball a little bit, and he ends up finishing 25th. And a 21st place finish from this car is pretty typical. I would say the 43 car is a 20th place car. Eric Jones is a top 10 driver. And so Eric Jones is able to will the car into the top 10, top 15 based on his exceptional talent. And I'm by no means a Jones fan, but I become more so every day when I really look at the car that he has and what he gets out of everything that he does. It is exceptional, and I probably need to put a little more respect in his name. Heim's not going to be able to do that. Heim's going to get what the car gets at best. And as you could see, his actual laps during the Dover race were 27th. So it's around a 25th place car, I would say, with Heim in it. That's close to being on the lead lap. That's close to hanging in there. That is the middle of the C class. But I have a hard time believing that he can beat Hill, LaJoy, Hemric, or Gilliland based on speed. Obviously, there's going to be restarts. There's going to be wrecks. One of these guys probably won't finish the race. There are plenty of variables and things that can happen in the race that boost Heim up. But on the surface, based on speed, experience, I don't expect this to be the top of the C class. I don't expect him to be in the best position to take advantage of some of the restarts at the end. But he is fringe. He is close. He's not as far off as a Burton or a Herbst, but he is in the Smith category. Nemechek is doing just enough. You could argue that he's more fringe like Heim, but he goes out there every week, and basically I've made the comparison of him being the new old Todd Gillen. He's the new old Todd. Todd Gillen, a year or so ago, was around a 25th place driver every week. John Hunter Nemechek is a 25th place driver every single week. People will look at his ratings and some of his finishes, but we look at his actual specific laps that he runs. He's right there at 25th, right there in 25th. And he actually gives you the perfect example of how these value picks can work. Runs 25th all day, finishes 34th at Texas. Tough luck. Crash on lap 226. So again, what we can see by looking at their actual laps, you know, people are going to see the driver rating. Oh, he stunk at Texas. No speed. Well, that's because he wrecked on lap 226. If we look at, well, what did he do before his event? He had a 25th place race car. And that's close to being within striking distance. That's close within being able to get to the top of the Le Mans class, the class of Lemons. And then also, one of the things you can see here is that if you can run 25th and finish 34th, you can also run 25th and finish 20th. That's the boost that we're talking about. Being in a position where you can get some of these gains and finish better than where you run. That's what we ultimately want from our value drivers. Stay in the game. Get some boost at the end. That's what I like amongst the yellow guys and the orangey color guys. Jimmy Johnson's laps suck. He's not running well. It's a struggle. I am not interested in him at any price, especially not 6,200. Carson Hocevar, a little bit slower than his teammate, Corey LaJoy. When we look at the C class, the Lemons class, he could battle at the end to be the top of this class. No doubt about it. 25th laps at Dover, 19th at Texas. All the numbers check out. Again, you can see that crazy Texas race. He illustrates what can happen if you just stay in the game. You stay on the lead lap. And things work out with the restarts at the end of a race. Get some track position, and boom goes the dynamite. That's what we're trying to get from these drivers. They don't necessarily need to illustrate the most speed in practice. They don't necessarily need to be the best drivers this season. But we're trying to find people in the Lemons class that can be fast enough that they can maximize at the end. Austin Dillon, probably not fair to put him in this category. Has been exceptional at Kansas over the years. You can pull that data up in the Fantasy NASCAR spreadsheet at racefortheprize.com, $30 a month of A. Venmo, PayPal, Cash App. Like and subscribe. Share the videos. Either way, based on struggles this season, I'm throwing him in this category. And based on his price, I don't mind throwing him back with the lemons. But because it is an RCR car, we should argue easily that if he avoids issues, he should simply be able to not only win this class, but break out of this class. Obviously, he had his issues at Dover. And I believe it was a loose wheel he had to pit for under green, put him laps down, so all of his laps look ugly. Takes him all race kind of to battle through. So you kind of just got to throw that out data-wise. You go back to Texas, a little bit not really good from an RCR perspective, running 22nd all day. But from the perspective of a lemons class, yeah, he's faster than the rest of these guys. And he should be in the lead lap and in contention at the end, and his Kansas data checks out. So 6,500, that's fine. But obviously the drawback to Dylan is that we have to also be cognizant of starting position, and he is more likely going to start closer to the front, which although he can win this class and maximize points at the end, if he can't get place differential two, then he's a downgrade over or lower play than a host of our Nemechek or Dylan or Hill or LaJoy. These cars probably have significant less speed, but we simply can't ignore chasing place differential. It has worked in the past at Kansas, and given the nature of the racing, I expect that to happen for a value pick. They finish much better than where they run. And although Dylan can win this class, if he cannot also access the finishing or the place differential bucket, you know, you have three scoring buckets. You can get points through finishing, you can get points through place differential, and you can get points through hog, which are fast laps and laps led. If Dylan can't really score any points in the finishing position bucket, and that bucket ends up empty, whereas LaJoy can get up 7 or 8 coins in his bucket, LaJoy may not finish as well, but those extra coins in the finishing position bucket make him a better value play. Stenhouse, I've already touched on. Car has speed, got some good juju now that he has signed back with JTG Daugherty. I think he is one of the main reasons for this sheet to show you that, hey, look, this is getting to be a top 15 car. It's just not necessarily translating in finishes yet. So the public sees the finishes, but if we look at more finely tuned data of where they're actually running before events and issues, the car has some speed. Austin Cindric, as I've talked about in previous podcasts, is waking up a little bit. He's getting there. 18th in laps at Dover, 18th in his actual laps at Texas. So again, you look at finishing position, but overall his driver rating is pretty similar to where he is doing. And that being the case, since his rating's kind of up there and his finishes have been solid other than Texas, much ran better than that. DraftKings has priced him up accordingly. We're not getting that $5,700 Austin Cindric. Very sharp on their point. Would love to have Austin Cindric still at below 6K. But he's improved, and so his price has increased. You project him around 18th, conservatively. That's 25, way off from 43. But you give him the boost, he can get to 35. Again, he runs the risk of starting a little too close to the front. And maybe he doesn't belong in the lemons class at the moment. But if you do put him in this class, he should be able to win it, along with Austin Dillon. He should be able to run inside the top 20 and then get that boost at the end. He is just as likely as any of these drivers. But the one caveat that we have with Cindric and Dillon, the two Austins this week, is that they're more than likely going to start close to the front, and they become less of a value play because of their limited access to place differential. And they are a little bit more expensive, obviously. McDowell, we look at what he did at Dover. Driver rating of 29th at Dover. His actual laps were 25th. He had the brake hub issue on lap 285. Not terrible, but we expect a lot more these days from McDowell. We look at Texas, though. And again, public sees 36, 35. McDowell's done. McDowell's toast. Maybe they're a little sharper and they look at the driver rating and they still see 29 and 15. Well, he had issues and events unfolded in a way that didn't really help him out. Obviously, the brake hub issue. And then down here at Texas, He wrecked on lap 143. But at Texas, before lap 143, what were his laps looking like? He had a 10th place car. 10th place speed for 143 laps. There's some speed here. If they can avoid wrecks, if they can avoid mechanical failures, then you might be able to find a little bit of an edge simply because people are looking at some finishing position or even driver rating. But when we look at the actual laps, we see that there's some speed. And he's priced pretty high. So I'd expect Michael McDowell ownership to not be very high this week. So that's your Lemons class. I guess our next tier here, as we grind away, thanks for joining me, Fantasy NASCAR Podcast. Gregson, Suarez, Briscoe, Barry, this is all kind of arbitrary to a degree. I don't really need to put these guys in a category together, but I'm looking at them as a category together. And if I were to compare Gregson, Suarez, Briscoe, and Barry, the two that I like the most are Gregson and Briscoe. And obviously, that's based on this data right here where we look, you know, Dover in Texas, 14th best driver. Dover in Texas, 15th best driver. So if we just say, hey, you can finish 15th in this race, that means boost-wise, things work out, you can be a top 10 driver. If I get a top 10 out of a 7,400 and a 7,100, that's probably going to be pretty good. Conservative projection, boost them up, and look at what we got. The real possibility of these guys being solid value plays and also finishing with top 10 DFS scores. Not much of a stretch. Obviously, making and breaking is going to be place differential in this category. I don't think there's that much speed difference. But if there is, I like Gregson and Briscoe. But Barry has been a top 15 driver. Pretty solid. He's working his way there. But ultimately, I do like Gregson and Briscoe better at this race. Speed-wise, but the deciding factor in this price tier is probably going to be place differential because I don't think the speed matters all that much right there. Our next group of borderline top 10 drivers, non-hogs, non-dominators, Logano, Bowman, Kozlowski, Buescher, you can really pick and choose whoever you want in this category. You could argue that the speed is just about all the same. Obviously, Bowman has a strong Dover race, but has been really good at Dover. If you want to think Dover is a step forward, that's fine. If you want to consider Dover as a one-off because he always runs well at Dover, that's fine as well. I'm kind of in between. Either way, I do not expect Bowman to leapfrog into the top tier and be in the conversation of drivers that are going to be hogs or dominators or top five drivers that scrape fast laps. More of a place differential play, more of a top 10, squeeze into the top five, but really just a place differential finishing position type guy. That's what Logano, Bowman, Kozlowski, Buescher are. I'm leaning Kozlowski just because it's kind of the magic man at the moment. We've seen him multiple times this season take a car that was top 15 and then finish second. Obviously, his Dover numbers are not good, as we can see down there in the bottom right. He had his issue halfway through. What was it? Here, I'll pull it up. So he wrecks on lap 224 and then spends the next 180, 176 laps running in the back. And so his numbers are going to look terrible. And that's going to be reflected in every single stat. That might push people off him because of the nature of the wreck and then going out. But at Texas, again, not a lot of speed in the RFK cars. But the reason that I lean towards these two more so than Logano and Bowman is because Kozlowski's been dynamite on pit road. They are master strategists and with multiple cautions that are going to play out during this race. And he also led laps last year at Kansas, by the way, but that was also when RFK was running hot. RFK is not running hot at Dover, Texas. As you can see, the speed is just not there at the moment. But they're fast enough that it could take advantage of some of the cautions at the end like they have. And that's why I'm leaning on Kozlowski. And I really don't think that among this group, I mean, you could probably argue that RFK is still faster than both of these teams. Then you've got your top tier. Your hogs are up here. I don't expect anything different. Hamlin, Larson, Reddick, Byron, Truex. that's who I expect to, you know, be in control of this race and leading laps, running fast laps. I'm not quite ready to put Bell in there because he's making so many mistakes recently. He could be $10,000 for a driver that's snake bitten. And even if his luck turns around, he still has to run better than Truex, Byron, Reddick, Larson, and Hamlin, who aren't just going to say, oh, you're lucky again. Well, right this way, sir. Now, the more intriguing drivers are a little bit down here, who offer you a little bit of savings, may not be able to lead laps, but can scrape fast laps in the top five. I think Chase Elliott has a hot rod, as demonstrated at Dover. One of the few drivers that could work his way through the field, was able to run pretty well at Kansas last year, despite his struggles all season, had a really good car at Kansas in the fall. Bubba Wallace and 2311 have always been really good at Kansas, so you can't write them off. I know 9500 is not really that appealing for Bubba Wallace, but he has shown us that he can be a top five driver at Kansas, obviously a winner at Kansas, and get some fast laps in the process and slide into that optimal lineup as a third or fourth pick. Not as bullish on Ty Gibbs, just haven't quite seen it. Again, the drivers ahead of him aren't just going to step out of the way and say, oh, you're the next big thing right this way, sir. He's going to develop, but look, the top tier is just not budging. People want Gibbs to have his breakthrough. People want Gibbs to be the next big thing. It's just not going to happen when you have guys dominating races every week. And there's just a ceiling at which he can get to. And there may be a one-off race where he does have that day. But for the most part, he needs Hamlin to say, right this way, sir. But even if Hamlin says, all right, you can have this one, kid. Larson's not. Reddick's not. You want to be the champ, you got to beat the champ. Ross Chastain, an aggressive driver that I think can maximize the restarts, and so I will consider him, although they are not running that well. You look at last year's Kansas race. I think you can write it off a little bit because it was a part of his mid-season slump. But overall, good intermediate track driver. Again, he's kind of slumping a little bit right now at the moment, but I think he can turn it around. I think Kansas is a race where he can take advantage of the restarts, be very aggressive, get into clean air, get some fast laps at 9,100, not going to kill me. Not a believer in Kyle Busch, definitely benefited from clean air all race at Dover and just being up there. I think if he finds himself in traffic at some point, which he will at Kansas with restarts and cautions, that he's going to struggle more. Ryan Blaney at 8,600 is probably a steal. When we're building our lineups and we're targeting those top tier drivers, Larson, Hamlin, whatever, and we're getting our hog laps, our fast laps, our laps ledge checked off, and we're paying up for them, and then we're building our lineups and we find that, yeah, we've got plenty of money to get Blaney, who can easily get into the top five, who can easily grab some fast laps throughout the process. Yeah, that's a bit of a steal. That's going to do it for me. Thank you for joining me here at the Fantasy NASCAR Podcast. Hopefully, this recording worked. I've been dealing with technical issues all morning, but I've got my fingers crossed that this recording actually worked. Will it work? I don't know. We're trying our best. Love you guys. Blessed to have you around. Trip to Light. Fantastic.